Okay, so this is first official pilot of Read Me Close. We'll do all the intro crap later. We're going to cut this shit out right here.
Yeah.
And put it all together. But this is Amy and I getting comfortable. So.
We're in the yurt.
Goddamn. What, is that a thing now?
Wait, what is a yurt? How do you define this
so
building?
A yurt is actually. Sorry. They use them in like Mongolia and other like the plains of Asia and other places like that. They're actually, you can usually take them apart and move them.
Uh-huh.
And they're dwellings that you live
in. It's definitely a dwelling.
Yeah, I know. They're actually really, really cool. There's a cool yurt that you get to see in the documentary Babies with the cutest of the babies. Well, no. They're all really cute. But the little baby from Mongolia.
It's in a yurt?
Yeah, they live in a yurt.
Do they get birthed in the yurt?
Strangely, she gave birth in a hospital and then got on the back of a motorcycle and drove back to the yurt.
But that, like, a family will live in the yurt together.
Yes.
Like a whole family. Wow.
The whole family.
Yeah, that's...
It actually is really cool and weirdly spacious.
I bet it is, yeah.
And they can just move it around, but it has such solid infrastructure.
Yeah.
It's like the most advanced tent that you could possibly make, basically.
Well, so walking in through the front door feels weird because it's slanted outward.
Yes.
It's like an overhang, so you're like, this is not going to be a...
level surface.
Yeah, a level floor. And then you come in and you're like, oh, shit, this place is big. So, you know, this is my first time in here, first time doing any kind of, well, I did some song recording, but that was, like, very different than this.
Amy's open mic.
LOL. I haven't done that in a while. We're not there yet.
Is it going to be a thing?
One project at a time.
Ah, okay. So, what I'm going to say is that I am so excited to have Amy here today. Amy is hopefully, yes, going to be my regular co-host, but... I thought I wanted to take this opportunity to also dig into a spicy topic. I cannot say that, good God.
No, it is spicy.
It is a spicy topic. Dig into a spicy topic with Amy while also introducing her as my co-host. And then, of course, we'll get into my ish later if we ever have to. Hopefully not.
This way I can prove that I'm qualified to talk about real issues. And then I'll interview May.
On something.
Probably about your business, your div.
We could just talk about David Attenborough.
There's a lot we could go into. Talk about training a friggin' dog.
Yes,
that'd be a whole topic.
Yes. So just in case anyone hears anything crazy in the background that can't be edited out, that are the sounds. Those are, good God, edit that out.
Yeah.
Those are the sounds of the yurt dog. That's not what he is, Amy, please.
He is a cute little 6-month-old Labradorian who will, well, is May's service dog in training.
In training.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty good.
He is pretty good. He's 6 months, you already said that, he's 6 months old, 6.5 months old.
Yeah, but for that age.
Yeah.
I'm pretty lucky.
So he's currently, he knocked out. He literally went from bitching to sleeping swiftly.
He just needed a second.
That was
We just let him out to play with a bunch of dogs, and he was being very whiny afterward, but we're in the clear, so let's do this thing.
All right. So, we are here to talk about a topic that is really important to Amy, and also, I realized, really important to me through the process of reading her senior thesis, her Division 3, her Div 3. I know, it is about to be a whole lot. Get ready,
Amy. Weed.
Yep, actually, though. So, we want to talk about something called polypharmacy today. Amy, do you want to share the title of your Division 3?
Well, yeah. So, actually, Will Ryan, my chair advisor here at Hampshire, helps me come up with it. But it's Psychos, Shrinks, and All the Pills You Can Swallow. Personal Exploration of the Inpatient Mental Health System.
Wow, you really remembered the whole second part.
I know. I didn't know if I was going to be able to, and then it came out, and I was like, yes!
Yeah, I don't ever remember the second part of my day.
It was also about to be a shame that I couldn't say the whole title, so I was like, I have to try.
I just realized we can swap this around, but I just want to ask you about your day and how that went. I haven't seen you all day. Amy and I also live together.
Sorry, here I am. Yeah, you know, my day was good because I took the day off today. I needed a little break. I I scheduled my root canal, so, you know, that's... Well, actually, the exam before the root canal, so they can make sure that my tooth isn't dead or anything, you know, of that matter.
Or your root isn't infected, because if it is, they're going to bore it out then and place a antibiotic directly into the root.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, I know.
Well, sorry. I don't know if anyone's offended by me saying Christ. I'll try not to do that on air, just for
girl, I think we may or may not say things that will offend them a lot more than Christ.
I know. We have to... You just have to accept it, I guess.
Yeah, I'm making peace with it as we speak.
Otherwise, it's going to be way too filtered, and we don't want to do that, so.
That's a lot of just work.
Yeah, it is a lot of work. But anyways, yeah, so I have to get a root canal, and, you know, I ordered my contacts, so I'm good on that. I call the gynecologist. I did all my bullshit this morning that I've been... Because there's nowhere, I work at a school, I'm an assistant teacher in middle school, and there's nowhere to go that's private where I can make calls about gynecology. So I took advantage of this day off that I gave myself and did that shit. And then what else did I do? I did some errands and I came here and I learned about all this and got really stressed out being on Hampshire campus because we don't know what the state of this college is going to be in a few months, so... How's your day? I already kind of know, but...
Well, as a Hampshire employee, very concerned about the state of my job status. I don't know. Employment?
It's a weird time.
Yeah.
When we get more information about this, we can
we'll delve talk into about it. Yeah. I work in admissions, so...
And even being on Hampshire campus right now is weird because...
It's so empty.
Yeah.
And of course, it's Shantern, so the students aren't here.
Yeah, but still, it's just, like, the vibe. Everyone's like, what the hell is going on? Even that woman who was just walking right here, she was like, so, can you tell me what the hell is happening here?
I know.
And I was like, oh, God, I gotta get out of here.
I know.
But the yurt feels like a safe space.
Yeah. No, it actually does. It's like a little island in the eye of the storm. Yeah, legit. So, back to the title of your div. Can you say that one more time, Amy?
All right. I'll just say the first part. Psychos, shrinks, and all the pills you can swallow. And it's basically about my experience in psych wards of the public variety and my problems with them and then analysis of possible solutions. And I give a history of inpatient mental health at the beginning. That's my first chapter. And then the second is kind of memoir-based, split into three sections. And then the third is ideas for solutions. But a main topic in my paper is polypharmacy, which is the prescribing of more than one drug at a time, more than one psychiatric drug. Well, yeah, technically psychiatric, but a lot of this problem is targeted a lot with the elderly specifically. Mm-hmm. And so then you have blurred lines between meds that are like for physical or other, you know, disabilities or diseases on top of psychiatric meds. So polypharmacy extends farther than people think.
Yes, and also a lot of psychiatric meds, a lot of people do not know, especially like anticholinergic medicines like Wellbutrin, which are psychiatric meds, mm-hmm. have very strong effects on the physical body that that they can actually sometimes are sometimes prescribed for especially types of dysautonomia. So there is a really strange overlap between the mental and the physical.
Right, and then there's gabapentin, which I used to take, which is for nerve pain, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm actually on gabapentin for nerve pain, numbness, tingling, and migraines.
Yeah, but they gave it to
me. Vestibular migraines, yeah.
They gave it to me for anxiety, so.
Look at that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it's just the beginning of the problem. But, I came back from several stints in inpatient psychiatric facilities after something happened to me while I was abroad, and every single one was just like one. It was just like the system was basically making me worse rather than better by drugging me so much, and there were other problems. I mean, there wasn't enough psychotherapy, and just the general vibe of the wards was just like, whoa.
Abysmal?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a more medicalized version of jail, in a sense.
It is. Yeah.
Except for it can be voluntary. Well, I guess jail and prison can be voluntary, too, but... Or, like, you can...
Turn yourself
in for something, but... I guess, no, those are not the same thing. Anyways, no, I mean, you're held against your will a lot of the time. You're restricted from a lot of things that you didn't necessarily know you would be. Like, you're very much following their rules.
And a lot of strange technicalities that can leave people in limbo, which is something I experienced in my stay in a public psychiatric ward back in high school. Let's back up just a little bit. I want to talk about what you studied at Hampshire and kind of how it led you to this topic, and whether was it linear was
no.
All right, so let's talk just a little bit about that. Where are you from? How old are you?
So I'm 24 and a half, and I'm from Ipswich, Massachusetts, which is only a couple hours north of where we are now, which is technically Amherst, Mass, on Hampshire campus. But yeah, I really came into Hampshire after transferring and also doing a year abroad teaching with AmeriCorps, thinking I would primarily study education. But I mean, since high school, I've had a lot of mental health stuff. So I always knew like psychology was part of my life, and we tend to study the things that affect our lives just by nature. So I mean, you know what Hampshire's like. You can craft everything. So I took a lot of classes, quite honestly, just ones that were sounded interesting, like philosophy. I took a philosophy of prisons class. I took a food science class. I took classes about public education, but I also took the psychology classes, and then I went abroad. So, like, I really diversified my Hampshire experience. But I came back from being abroad and tried to start a div, and I had no idea what I wanted to write about because I had kind of like lost myself on that trip from a traumatic experience. And I started writing about like Chinese education and how Chinese students adapt to the learning environment here. And I had no idea how I'd gotten myself to that direction. And so after I got through the first semester of my div, like I scraped, you know how you can kind of scrape by doing a lot of research and like writing a lot of notes and stuff, and then your second semester can be like dedicated to the writing. And I did some writing, but I wasn't proud of it, and I really wasn't interested or passionate. And anyone that goes to Hampshire knows it's very hard to complete your studies here if you're not excited about
them. No one's making you do it.
Especially senior year, because you're not really in class, so it's all you're doing. But yeah, so I left, and I was really I finished the semester, and then I went into the summer like not knowing what to do, and was really upset. Was really upset, and I decided eventually, after trying to find a few different things to like fill my summer, I ended up back at home with my parents, and I decided to voluntarily one day, like I was just driving my car after doing something else, and was like, I'm just gonna go to the fucking hospital and check myself in because I don't know what else to do. Because I really just, at that point, was, like, afraid to be alive. I just didn't want to deal with it anymore. Because it felt like it had been so bad for so long. It was only, like, 6 months, but it felt like forever. And they're always like, there's going to be a turning point. And I was like, nope, there's not.
So it was almost on a whim.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I, like, just, so to back up, I'd been in one before back in high school, but it was a lot less serious. I got myself through it, and then was, you know, dealt with my shit. But this time it was a lot deeper than that. And, yeah, I just didn't have any other options. I remember being like, I'll just get into a car accident accidentally. Or like, I just won't wake up one day, but like, that's not life.
Yeah.
It's not how life works. Anyway, so yeah, I went, and like, I had been through the process before, so I was just kind of hoping that it would be better, but I also knew like at least they'll just like take me away somewhere, because when you're that low, you don't want to take care of yourself, you don't care about yourself. So I just wanted someone else to deal with me and like
a pause button.
Yeah, just not be a part of it. Just be like, okay, you guys like do everything and just get me out of like my daily life because I can't do it. Which is not necessarily like a mature, rational thing to like conclusion to come to at all. But I wasn't in a rational state of mind at all, so. Anyways, yeah, so I went into that place and, got a bunch of new medications. They were like, try this new antidepressant and we'll give you an antipsychotic. And that will be, you know, that will augment and amplify the effects of the antidepressant. And I'm like, oh, that sounds weird, but like, sure. I had no options. I didn't have any, like, I didn't have anything to lose, I thought, at that point. So the antipsychotics started making me feel weird. I was dissociating a lot, which is really hard to describe if you haven't been through it. But you know, I mean, you know, it's like being outside your body.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like I was already pretty much suicidal, and then I felt like I also wasn't existing in my own life, you know, from that. And But I left the hospital after a week, and there were some really, the only good part of my experiences in those public places were the other patients, because they, like, I made some friends in there. But, so I left, and then they were like, you need to go to an intensive outpatient, which was run through the same hospital. And I was like, okay, like, again, nothing to lose. It's covered by my insurance. I should do it. Like, I'm not well. And so I went to that, and within, like, the second day, I kept having panic attacks because I felt so weird. Dissociation for me is like not something some people do it as a defense mechanism. Yes,
I do.
Yeah. And I personally just, I hate it. Like I hate it's, it was induced by medication for me. And so it just scares the shit out of me.
And so how long had you been in that psychiatric ward post study abroad before you went into the outpatient program?
They try and keep you for no more than 5 days, but I think it was Memorial Day weekend, actually, so it ended up being, like, a week.
A full week.
Yeah.
And so we'll probably call intensive outpatients probably just IOPs from...
Yeah, Toronto. IOP, yeah. So, yeah, I had a panic attack during one of the groups at my IOP and, like, went to the... social worker who was working with me and was like, I can't handle this. I don't know what to do, whatever. And I really wasn't, again, being rational, but she was like interpreting what I said as, you know, being suicidal, which honestly, I guess I still was to some extent. So she brought me over to the emergency room and they admitted me to a different ward at that same hospital that I'd never been to before.
Okay.
It was a bit bigger. I had two roommates. I became good friends with one of them. And sorry, the dog's moving around. And the doctor there was a bitch.
that is not what I thought you were
gonna... Sorry.
Sorry, no, totally okay. It just like woke me up.
Sorry.
Go for it.
So I really begged and pleaded them not to admit me at the ER because I was like, going to another facility is not going to help me. A public facility where they're just going to put me on more meds or give me a higher dose. Like, I don't need that. It won't get me anywhere. I have to deal with this on my own. Blah, blah, blah. But they were, you know, it's a liability for them. That's really what it comes down to not admit me if I make any kind of, like, suicidal, you know, what is the word? Innuendo?
Yeah.
Indication. Indication. Yeah.
So... let's pause. In that moment, when you're speaking to her, and I personally have this experience of being hyper aware of everything that you're saying, right?
Right.
And how they're taking it every single second, reading their nonverbals, just every little reaction. What was it like the moment you realized they were going to commit you again?
Just like absolute defeat. I was like, first of all, I waited in like a gurney. You know, the ER can take forever. I waited in a gurney, literally in the hall, because they run out of rooms, for like 8 hours before anyone really talked to me and made a decision. And then, since I was being argumentative, not like I didn't threaten to leave, although I did consider like running out. But then they had a guard stand next to my bed until they were ready to wheel me over. I forgot about this.
Yeah.
I was pretty fucking pissed. And then... but I was also so over it. I was literally like, can they just drug me? Like, so I can go to sleep and not wake up. But I just didn't care, like, what happened next. I don't know how else to describe it. But you don't really have a choice when you're in there but to get through it, because there's really nowhere, you know, they take away anything that you could use to harm yourself. You're pretty much on lockdown, and you want to get out, you know? That's... just to, because there's no way to do any, okay.
You did some things. We'll get to that later.
Yeah, but it's just like you end up, so I went there. I couldn't get there until midnight, I was actually, the overnight nurse was really nice, and she got me saline solution because my contacts were going to dry up in my eyes. So that was nice of her. Anyways, I woke up in the morning. I called my parents. I was like, please come and see me and bring me clothes at least. And then I met with my doctor and I cried and I was like, I can't be in here. This is stupid. I won't accomplish anything. But she was like, you're suicidal. And I'm like, but I'm not going to do anything about it, you know? So
I'm suicidal, but I'm also a pussy.
Yeah, I'm like, exactly. I was like, I'm not going to fucking kill myself. It doesn't Same. Work. Yeah. Like, it's
obviously we're not.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Verbal hyperbole. Right. Yeah.
It's just so frustrating because, again, it comes down to legal liabilities. It's not about, oh, we really care about you as a person individually. Like, she didn't know me, and she wasn't even nice about it.
No.
But it's, you know, it is what it is, and she upped my doses of the antidepressant and the antipsychotic, which...
Do you feel comfortable saying what they are?
Yeah, is that some, yeah. Totally, yeah. But it's funny because, so the antidepressant is called Prestique, which is a very uncommon one to use, a medication to use. I really don't know quite why it works well for me, but I also got gene testing done where basically they took a swab out of my cheek to see where, like, because they can line up certain medications with certain...
In private care, yeah.
Yeah. So they can get a better idea of, the antidepressant. Usually, I think it's used mostly for SRIs and SNRIs, which are two different types of antidepressants.
Okay. So to keep this... No. Just to keep this in focus, especially since we're going to keep coming back to the point of polypharmacy.
Yeah.
Round one, when you check yourself in, what medications did they put you on? And did they explain the purposes?
Yeah, so, okay, so round one, I was put on Cymbalta, which is an antidepressant, and then, Cymbalta and...
Lexapro?
No, it was an antipsychotic. Cymbalta and the second antipsychotic was Invega. What was the first one?
Let's see.
Antipsychotic. Risperidone. Got it. Okay. Okay, so the first round was Cymbalta, which is an antidepressant, and Risperidone, which is an antipsychotic. And I'd been on an antidepressant up to that point, Lexapro. It wasn't working for me, so that they switched it. I was comfortable with that.
I hear it works for some people. But it's very rarely. I mean, Lexapro, I literally forgot I had a clitoris for an entire year.
You know, it did work for me for several years, but clearly it wasn't working now. And my psychiatrist back at home was afraid to change things.
Okay.
She was like, oh, we'll give you Ativan, which is a benzodiazepine, anti-anxiety, so as an emergency thing. So I did have that as well. Mm-hmm. And... but not very much, so I really wasn't taking it very often. Anyways, Cymbalta and Risperidone I was less comfortable with. I didn't understand why I was being given an antipsychotic when I don't have any symptoms of psychosis. Generally, people with schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder or have any kind of like hallucinations or... you know, they hear voices. That's generally what risperidone's used for. But all of these blurred lines have been created between different categories of medication because people have, you know, messed around with using them. And it does, certain combinations do work for certain people, but it's very specific, you know.
Individualized.
Exactly. So those were the two I started on. And then that was the first psych ward. And then I went to the second one. And
after the 10-day outpatient program, but you lasted 2 days.
Yes. So I spent a week in the first place, came out, was out for about 4 days. It was like a weekend and then
okay, weekend.
2 days of outpatient. Went to the second place for another week about, and they didn't change any of my medications there. And she just upped the doses of the Cymbalta and the Risperidone that I was already on. So nothing about my, and what her argument was that I was just adjusting most likely to the medications because, you know, they change your, they alter your neurotransmitters and, you know, so that can be very powerful and as most people know, there can be a lot of side effects, and so, you know, it can be a lot. But I really, I mean, I again had to give her the benefit of the doubt. I didn't really see another option, and didn't really know how to help myself at that point. So I stayed on those, and I was kind of the same throughout that entire week there. Made a couple friends, but there really isn't much else to say about it. There was, you know, again, some very unsettling aspects of it. There was nowhere to go outside. We didn't go outside at all, ever, which was awful, and there really wasn't a lot of private places to go, and it was, you know, one of my roommates was literally, I mean, this might not be worth getting all into, but she had had a really bad eating disorder and, you know, not enough money to get any private care. And she's older. She was like in her 50s, but she looked even older than that. And she just kept getting put in and out of places, until her body, you know, like literally withered away, and she had no desire to live, but she also like couldn't walk and complained that her like body was just so weak that it had atrophied. But the doctors didn't believe her because there were no test indicated that, you know, she was too weak or that there was something wrong where she wouldn't be able to move around. So they just weren't helping her. They were just like, it's all in her head, you know, this whole thing. So
come on, if an anorexic doesn't want to walk, we've got a major problem.
Yeah. And you know, the fact that she was older contributed to things, but you know, it was just a really fucked up situation, and she needed private help, like a lot of it. But yeah, there was just no, she had nobody that could help her with that. She had her sister.
We're definitely going to make sure at some other point, we're really going to dive deep into eating disorders and their treatment.
Right. So that was the most, like, I think, unsettling kind of situation I was in with at that ward. Not in, but I would help her. And then I got yelled at for helping her, actually, for wheeling out a wheelchair. And I was told that I was enabling her by one of the techs. So it was stuff like that that just, and the groups, and you know, you have to keep in mind too that all types of people get filtered into public psych wards. So, you know, some people are there because they're homeless and they actually want a place to stay. Some people are primarily battling drug addictions. Some people are very mentally ill and don't have like a rational version of reality. And then there's, you know, some people are ex-cons, you know, you just don't know what,
yeah.
And it's all different ages, because while they do have like an adolescent and children's unit, if you're above 18, it's anybody.
Exactly.
So you're in there with kids, people your age, not kids. And then you're in there with like 60 and 70 year olds who have no idea what's going on. So it's an interesting crowd.
What made you want to help Sandra? Or,
oh yeah, that's her name in the story. Well, she was one of my roommates. I had two roommates, which is also unusual. Usually they're doubles, but we had a triple. And she, at first I didn't interact with her at all. So there were two beds, actually, and it was me and this other girl, Michaela, I think is what I called her. Yeah, Michaela. Yeah. And she and I actually became good friends. She was also in her late 40s, but she was really cool. And we just had a lot of similarities. She was from nearby my town. Anyways, so then they wheeled in Sandra like the next night or something, and she clearly couldn't walk. And I started to realize she wasn't leaving the room at all.
Right.
And I would interact with her anytime I went in my room. Like she was very friendly, very nice. And, you know, I enjoyed talking to her, although most of our conversations were very depressing. But so I started, you know, doing simple things. Also, I was so like, just, I guess, sad and caught up in my own misery that the only thing that I felt like gave me any purpose was helping somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as cliche as that might sound, like, it was one of the few things I could do to make myself feel better. Was, yeah, like, you know, when you dive into somebody else's stuff,
oh, yeah,
to get away from your own? I mean, that's basically what I did. But obviously, it, and then I left and I gave her my phone number. She, we might not want to keep this in here, but she gave,
go for it.
She gave me her sister's phone number, but it was like to a house phone. And she was like, I don't know if she'll, no, it wasn't to a house phone. It was her sister's cell phone, but she had a weird relationship with her sister, and she hadn't talk to her sister yet because she couldn't get to the phone. The phones were on the wall. They were like pay phones.
Right.
She literally hadn't called her sister, but she wrote down the number and she was like, can you call her when you get out? And I was like, I really want to say yes, but I feel so awkward calling your sister and being like, yeah, your sister is in the psych ward that I was just in, and I just wanted to tell you that she's in there and she's not doing well. Like, I just didn't know what the... It was... Anyways, so I texted her because I thought, okay, like, that's a good start at least. Mm-hmm. And she didn't answer, so I... I didn't pursue the situation. Anyways.
Relief or disappointment? Or something else?
Okay, I think the other thing is I felt very helpless with Sandra's situation, and I was so sick and so messed up at that time that I really knew I wasn't going to be able to, like, handle keeping up with Sandra after I left. Like, I was just as suicidal when I left that ward, and I knew that I couldn't control what was going to happen with her, and I kind of was just like, I have to let this go. Because mm-hmm. It was also a very depressing situation to be a part of, you know? And I hate to say that I, like, refused to help someone, because that's not what I felt like it was, but I just... There was... If I got involved in that situation, there was nothing I could do, really. And I just didn't see how I would benefit or they would benefit from me getting involved, because I had nothing to give. She needed private care. I had nothing... I didn't have any money. I didn't have any money for myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't have anything for her. I couldn't house her anywhere. I couldn't help her. Like, I guess I could have visited her, but I got myself into another psych ward right after that. So I didn't have...
Okay. So you left psych ward number two, mm-hmm. which... Was this the same place as number one or different? No. Different place, same different doctors? Place.
Yeah.
Okay. So...
No. Different place, different doctors.
Different place, different doctors. Yeah. Okay. So...
Just in a few towns over from the first one.
Okay. So you leave psych ward number two. Where's your head at the day you leave?
So weirdly enough, not weirdly, but coincidentally, no. Ironically enough, I did do some, like, quote-unquote healing, you could say, while I was in there, but not to the credit of any of the doctors there. I did some. My parents visited every day. We talked through a lot of things. They were my main support people at that time. They were all I had. Mm-hmm. I didn't have friends around that were coming to visit me. I didn't have their phone numbers. They took my phone. So, and my parents were really there for me. And it's amazing that I had that, you know, and it's not that they weren't enough. I just needed real intensive help that they couldn't or weren't qualified or able to provide me, which is fine. Anyways, they came every day. We talked a lot. I journaled. I thought through, they actually had a computer there, which was great. Not all psych wards have computers. Mm-hmm. But I had some job interviews lined up. Yes. And I found out that I was going to be stuck in there when they refused to let me go. So I needed to send some emails and reschedule job interviews and whatnot. And I was able to do that in there. So you have nothing to do but sit around and think about what you're going to do when you get out or what you're going to do next. So I just sat there and thought about how I can make it work. So I think I was slightly optimistic when I left, but I still didn't feel myself. I was still very dissociated. I was still very out of my body, very anxious about it. But I did think that maybe I could pull it together. Mm-hmm. I had a slight sliver of hope. I had a few new friends from that experience that I could start connecting with. And I did get just a, like, casual cafe job when I got out.
Yeah.
I also went back to the same IOP that I was at previously and started over.
Okay.
And I lasted, like, a week this time.
So, hey, you know, progress.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right? At least it wasn't 2 days. And I didn't cause a scene there. I went for a week, got that cafe job, everything I did, every new, like, success, however minor, that I achieved, I thought I was like, this is going to be my saving grace. This is going to be the thing that lifts me up, you know? And nothing ever was, because I was banking on the wrong things. You know, you can't bank on a cafe job to lift you back up.
Yeah.
Like, it was just very naive of me and very desperate, too. And so it was just not enjoyable at all, and the dissociation was really bad, and I think at that point I had also gotten poison ivy on top of everything for my dog, so I was really miserable. I was on a steroid called prednisone too, I just felt, so that
just blew you right up.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. I was just on so many meds and, three, but they had just upped them and changed them.
And prednisone's a doozy.
Prednisone. I was also taking Benadryl sometimes for the poison ivy, and because of I have some bad allergies, I was.
Sorry, I can't even imagine you with poison ivy. Good God.
And it was on my face and on my wrists, and I was just like, how many things are going to beat me down? Like, I really can't. Of course, in retrospect, I'm like, could have been a lot worse, but it is what it is, and I don't feel guilt or shame about it anymore, which is why I'm speaking about it. So I just gave up and, the interesting thing, and sorry if this gets dark for a second, is because I'm a pussy, the only way that I can conceive of actually committing suicide is by taking pills, because I want it to just be, I just want to go to sleep and not wake up.
Right.
Who doesn't, if they're going to have that fate. So I figure the only way to do that is with pills. Right. And then, but I pussy out and I don't take enough.
Damn.
So I just end up getting really like loopy and fucked up. And then I wake up and I'm like, damn it.
Yeah.
I really wasn't trying to do anything. I just knew it was like 7 p.m. and I like told my parents I was going to bed, and they were like, what the fuck? They just didn't know how to help me. And I just took some Benadryl, and I took some like leftover Ativan, and I took whatever, and I had already taken my meds that day, and I was taking the prednisone, and I just blacked right the fuck out until for 24 hours. So it was crazy. I really did not. I think the prednisone really threw me over the edge.
So we laugh at things that aren't funny. Future reference.
This is a coping mechanism. Hopefully you guys can see it that way too when you're listening to this.
Sorry. They're going to laugh or I'm going to cry. So I'm going to go with laughing.
Right. Maybe
it was just for the pen.
To be fair. Yeah, just reach for the vape pen. No, to be fair, I'm a very... good place comparatively, so it's easier to laugh about now. Anyways,
sorry, yes.
Not a laughing matter.
So,
You
almost killed yourself.
I
sorry.
Sorry, I'm gonna have to edit out that pause. Not get really anything out of that.
Yeah, you did.
I don't feel a burn.
Okay, Amy, that's not how it works.
So I remember only... I'll tell you the flashes I remember. I woke up in like an... They have like a mental health section technically of the ER. So I woke up in one of those rooms like very briefly and like saw that my parents were there. And then like fell asleep again. And then I literally woke up back in... the first ward I was in to begin with.
Okay.
What did I call it in there?
Pinecliff.
Oh, okay. I woke up back in Pinecliff, which is a 6-person ward, by the way. So it's very small. It's just one hallway and like a living area at the end. Just in a bed. Like I recognized the room, obviously, in different clothes with a little bag of like a paper bag of belongings next to me. And did not remember getting there. Like don't remember anything, but it wasn't that dramatic. I never turned my light off. Like I must have blacked out like pretty like all of a sudden, because I didn't necessarily go to bed right away. Anyways, I blacked out. My light was still on, so they came in the morning, and I was just like sitting there like talking incoherently with like vomit on me. They were like, fucking A. My poor parents. I really just I hate telling the story because I just feel my shame comes from feeling so bad about how they must have felt in that moment.
Right.
There's just no, that just doesn't go away, but
yeah,
you learn to live with it. So they like called the social worker I'd been working with. They took me to the ER. Of course, they admitted me. So it really wasn't. And I was, they didn't pump my stomach. Like, I was fine. I wasn't throwing up. It was just once. So it wasn't, the fact that I blacked out makes it sound really intense, but physically, I wasn't, my body wasn't in jeopardy or anything. My life was not in jeopardy. But it was pretty scary, nonetheless.
Yeah.
For my parents, I don't remember it. But I also don't remember, so they changed, so I got back to Pine Cliff.
And you woke up and you went looking for your doctor, right?
Mm-hmm. And I have no recollection of them talking to me about changing my meds. Apparently, when I woke up, I had already been there for quite some time. Not like, maybe like 8 hours, 10 hours, something like that. Not days, but it had been a bit. So they had talked to me, and you have to do an intake each time. No matter how fucked up you are. Like, they have to get certain information from you. So, like, I'd been giving them that information, and I sort of remembered it at the time. Right now, I have zero memory, but, like, I know that I had some recollections of talking to them, but I couldn't, none of it was coherent. So, like, so I went and talked to a nurse, and then later to my doctor, but they had changed pretty much all of my meds. So I was on Cymbalta and Risperidone when the overdose happened, and then I woke up, and I was still on, so they put me on Effexor, which is a different kind of antidepressant that actually gives you more energy. It's more of a stimulant. So that made me really jumpy. And then I was on Invega, which is just another antipsychotic, does pretty much the same thing. So I just swapped two types of meds for two of within the same category. And then they put me on Lamictal, which is a mood stabilizer. It's used a lot for people with bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. The idea is that it augments the stuff that the other meds are doing. But mm-hmm. I think that's subjective. And then Klonopin, the big bad boy, the good mm-hmm. one, the good stuff.
Ex-bestie.
Yeah. So the Klonopin really got me through. For those who don't know what Klonopin is, it's
also a benzo.
Yeah. Benzo, yes. Yeah. It makes you very calm and relaxed. And
some would say robotic, as my high school friends complained.
Robotic. It made me feel like I could do things, though.
I loved it. I loved Klonopin me. Everyone else hated it.
Yeah.
The world seemed bearable.
Well, I felt like everyone hated me anyways, so I didn't really matter because of how much stress I was causing everybody. So,
yeah. So now we have the Effexor, the Invega, the Lamictal, and Klonopin.
Yeah, it's very good. So we have four now. And I just don't remember getting all of that prescribed, like having conversations. So that's kind of unnerving. But I don't doubt that they happened.
Yeah.
I don't think that they, and I, you know, I'm not just being nice because clearly I don't have good feelings about this place.
Right.
I really don't think they drugged me. They have to get your consent.
Right.
And I do think they did. I just don't remember.
Some form of it. Yeah. which we will say does not carry over to other situations. If a person is drunk or high. Yeah. That's not consent.
Mm-hmm. No. Maybe this shouldn't have been consent either because I was.
That's what I'm saying. So up, just, so. You know.
But in this case, I consented while I was drugged and they drugged up of my own doing and they put me on those meds. So, I mean, again, at this point, I really did not know what to do. I knew that private care was probably going to have to be on the table, and I knew that if my family had to pay for it, they would. And that might have been kind of a fucked up mindset to have, but I just didn't know how else I would survive. But I also figured my parents had gotten to that point. I was more just like, let my parents figure out what to do next with me because I have no clue, no power in this situation, no clue. Like, clearly I'm not well, so... But I felt awful that entire time. It was really hard. There were a lot of, I could make a lot of excuses for how I felt because of all of the pills I'd consumed because of my overdose. I was like, I must just be fucked up because of all of the pills I ingested. But then I did notice classic signs of side effects, of some of these medications. Like the Effexor made me really jumpy and I couldn't sit still, and all I wanted to do was sleep, and my body wouldn't let me. It was fucking annoying. And I still felt dissociated. So that was still there. And then the Klonopin just fixed that shit, which was nice.
I know.
The Klonopin is, at first they prescribed it as needed, which is good. They should always, you should always start a benzo as needed because that shit is addictive. And
see that, mine went straight to 3 times a day.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah.
That was like 16, 15, 16. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they did change mine because I was asking for it every day. I really needed it. I really needed it to keep myself like placated. So,
yeah.
And I was never having panic attacks like this before, mind you. Like in my, yes, like I was suicidal. I was, had a lot of severe emotions, but like
but
I
not panic.
Wasn't having these attacks where I literally couldn't, well, I guess I was, but not to this extent. So it just felt like I was deteriorating, which sounds dramatic, but you know, that was the mindset I was in. And I was like, I'm never going to feel normal. But my parents did decide to pursue the private care route. And that was the only thing that, like, got me. I don't know where I would be right now. And I don't say, I mean, I say that very seriously. I don't know what type of, like, mindset, state of being, or what type of facility I could possibly be in right now if I hadn't gotten private care. Or gotten into some kind of really strong public facility. Or just gotten my shit together somehow.
Right.
So.
So you moved from public care at Pine Cliff, we'll call mm-hmm. it, to private care. Mm-hmm. And you had to travel quite a bit for this, yeah?
Yeah, it was across the country. So, which was fine. They actually couldn't admit me right away.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't, I mean, I... And actually, so honestly, to that at that point, knowing I was getting to, it was a very big relief to know that I was going somewhere that was going to help me, despite how anxious I was. Like, I, at least I had a plan, you know, at least I had a sliver of hope that this place would help me.
It would
and
be
this,
different, yeah.
Yeah, and it is very highly, it's one of, it's like in the top five. It's in the top five best ranked private hospitals in the country. So,
yeah,
I was very lucky, but they couldn't take me for like 5 or 6 days. So my dad and I made like a little road trip out of it and saw some national parks. And it gave us, it was a very good bonding time for us because we haven't always, you know, within my family, the cause and like coping mechanisms for mental illness have not always been
the best.
Right. We've all, there have been some very strong differing opinions within of my family members, and so I think this gave us a chance to talk some of that through, and for my dad to really see how much what was happening to me was affecting me and how like out of control it had gotten, and to like find me in there again, you know, because we had some really like intimate conversations that we've never been, like an emotional conversations that we've never had before. So it was really good bonding time for us. And I'm really thankful that he was the one who stepped up and decided to do that with me, rather than my mom, because she had always kind of been the one up to that point to help me mm-hmm. with these issues. I mean, my dad worked full time and he was retired, at this point. So he had more time for me, I guess, too, for things like this rather. And, yeah, but he wanted to, and they didn't, so the other thing is they didn't want me to go home
right.
at all, and I didn't want to go home either, so it was, as weird as it sounds, it was a way to
what
just...
What was the reasoning?
I mean, I didn't feel safe at home.
Mm-hmm.
I guess knowing that I was going into private care in those next 5 days or so would have made a difference, but yeah, I didn't feel safe at home. They didn't feel safe having me at home. Mm-hmm. There were like a lot of other things going on. They would have had to leave me home alone a lot. And I know that sounds they would have had to leave me home alone a lot. And I know that sounds kind of childish, but, and it was just an opportunity for, I don't know. It was just something that happened. I have really no say in the whole situation. But it was great. And it didn't make me better, but it helps me get into a mindset of like healing going into treatment. So yeah.
So you're across the country now. You're yeah. in private care.
Mm-hmm.
First handful of things you notice.
So I was really nervous that it was just going to be the same as public, honestly, in a lot of ways. I was mostly nervous about the medication stuff, that it would never be fixed. So obviously I go in, it's a whole campus and there are different units and, you know, the whole administration area is nicer. And I find out I'm going to be on a ward, like a young adult, not, I should call it a unit, a young adult unit.
What's the difference between a ward and a unit? Why the word choice?
I don't know. I feel like ward, like psych ward has a more like condescending, tone to it because I associate it more with like asylums and what things were like in the 18 and 1900s. And I just like, I actually looked this up when I was writing my div and I don't think there's much of a difference. I just don't like the word.
Yes. Okay.
So units. Yeah. So I went through the admin stuff and it was very thorough. They were really taking their time with me. That was the first thing I noticed. And I talked so much like for so long and they didn't stop me or like cut to the chase. It felt like a genuine conversation.
So how long were your intakes previously or your evaluations, like, at the other two facilities?
Probably total, because they do a lot. They have to do a lot of different things. They take your info. They look through all your stuff. They have to weigh you and do all of those. Take your blood pressure, all of those things. Probably
in terms of the psychological evaluation?
I'm talking about the... Yeah, so in the public ward, I guess it depends on the place. But generally, yeah, you go through like just a general intake. Mm-hmm. They get all your information. And then you go to the bathroom and put on a robe and they search you there. And then that's really the intake. The psych eval isn't until the next day when you're already a patient and you meet with the doctors.
Okay.
So that initial intake period, is probably like 20 to 25 minutes, depending how busy they are. Mm-hmm. 'Cause sometimes you have to wait to have it, but it's not personal. It's, you know, they're just following a set of questions, filling in the answers. So it's just very impersonal and very like, it's like bare bones, you know, it's the questions you expect to be asked. I want to phrase that better. They're predictable questions in the sense of being like, are you hearing voices? Are you on medication? What led you here? Are you suicidal? Like, and
the usual.
The usual, yeah. Exactly. So it was much more in depth. It was
Garvington. Shush.
Go ahead. It was much more in depth at the private hospital, and my psychiatrist actually came and talked to me because they assign you with somebody. I told her I was very anxious about the whole medication situation. I really wanted to get off some of my meds.
Mm-hmm.
Up until the point of these public hospitalizations happening, I'd only ever been on one medication.
Right.
And now I was on four, and one of them was a very addictive one.
Right.
The Klonopin. So I didn't feel right. So I was very stressed out. I just wanted to feel normal again because I was like, I can't do the work to heal myself if I don't feel like myself.
Right.
So it was like a combo pack there. And she was really receptive and kind. And then I got to the unit and they did a more detailed like background of me, one of the nurses there. And then I had such a nice room. I did have a double, but they had like a wall that was like 3/4 long.
Okay.
And just the space near the doorway where the two rooms crossed.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of privacy within my own room. It was really like two rooms with a wall between them. And my roommate was really nice. And like I had a big bed. I had my own little bathroom. It was just very like pleasant. And then I started meeting the people the next day. I got my own cell phone. That was huge. Everyone got their own cell phone. All you could do was make calls. No texting, no social media, no camera, nothing. Just calls.
Mm-hmm.
So I could contact like my people whenever I wanted. I had their numbers written down. It was very like comfortable environment.
And you also mentioned that your care team, the way it looked, really changed. Can you describe that?
Oh, yeah. So like it took a couple days for me to meet everyone on my team.
Mm-hmm.
And there were probably like 24 of us. 20 to 25 people in the ward at various times. And there was a boy's side and a girl's side, ages 18 through 30, mostly on the younger side. So I I made a lot of friends, honestly, but I had my psychiatrist who I had met the day before. Then I was assigned a therapist who was great. I had a primary nurse. You know, there's a nurse's station at any type of psychiatric unit. And the nurses rotate. So I got to know a lot of the nurses, but I had a primary nurse. And then they have what's called an MHA, which I think stands for mental health advisor. It might also be, yeah, mental health advocate, but I think it's advisor. Anyways, the MHAs are like kind of like aides. So they did 15-minute checks on us.
Oh, yeah, those.
For like every day, all day.
Yeah, every day, all day.
24/7. Yeah. So they're doing that. They're lining you up and taking you to lunch. They're helping you keep track of the schedule. They're checking, you know, so they're doing all of that, like that type of stuff. So we had a primary one of those. I had a social worker who did all of my family therapy. Mm-hmm. So just offhand, that's like 1 to 5 doctors.
Yeah.
Plus a lot of other staff, like the art therapist I got to know. Mm-hmm. One of the, like the yoga teacher I got to know. Some of the other therapists from other units who would come do groups with us. And then some of the other nurses. So there were a lot of like staff. And I stayed for 2 months. So I formed a lot of really meaningful relationships, even though I don't obviously contact the staff now. But they really got to know me, and I got to know them to a certain extent. And so like I think they also do, the ones who really want to be there do get invested in your care, and they really were there for me. So that was really meaningful. And they become kind of like your friends too. Like they joke around with you, you know, they don't treat you just like strictly a patient, because you're living there for 2 months with the whole community of people. It's not like a really sterile, like, medical environment necessarily.
They make it more home-like.
Definitely. Which is part of what you're paying for.
Right. So, like, throw back to that's kind of, I think you mentioned something more earlier in your paper when we were kind of speaking more about the history along the lines of a cottage plan, maybe, but not quite like separate housing, really leaning more towards what was it called? I think you called it moral treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having a campus so that people could move about and utilize the land, be outside, and have people housed in different areas. Yeah, I don't know, we're on a campus right now. I mean, think about like college and living in a community, it's kind of like that. It's, you don't want to be stuck. Like, yes, I was on a unit and that made me nervous, but it was very large, very spacious. We had an outdoor deck. There were 2 wings for, you know, separating boys and girls. And then, you know, what's interesting is I don't know how they went about working with trans people. I guess
and non-binary.
I guess it was probably their decision which side they wanted to be on. Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
That doesn't really suffice.
Yeah.
You really have to dig into that at one point. We'll find someone who knows about these things.
Right. I don't know of a single psych hospital that, because they always separate by gender.
They always do.
Yeah. So that's very outdated.
Which is hilarious because I don't know what they're trying to stop.
Yeah. Although I did have sex in this psych ward.
Yeah.
Have we covered this?
No, we were going to get there. Do you want to go there now?
No, but you know that, right?
Yes, I do. Okay. I do.
It doesn't have to be right now, then. I just didn't know if you even knew that yet.
I did.
LOL. Okay.
Was this with the Satanist?
Oh, God. No, he was before. He was a guy I met in one of the public psych wards. He took me to a dark place. We hung out in the cemetery. We made out in the cemetery, actually. That's how I knew. That was a few days before my suicide attempt. So.
Sorry.
No, this is juicy info, honestly. But it's, yeah. He was younger than me. He did not help my cause. And my parents did not want me to see him again.
No, I'm sure they didn't.
Anyways. So. No, this was actually a very good guy who I, you know, I still contact now, and he's doing well. But yeah, his name was, we're not going to go there right now, actually.
Yeah, we don't have to. All right. So refocusing.
So it was very spacious.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a community. We went from place to place. We did do a lot of groups at the unit and spent most of our time there. But we went to the dining hall. We went to the pool. We went to the gym. We were allowed to take walks. We got to, did not feel closed in, I guess. And that was really important.
Okay. So just to really illustrate, for sometimes I forget that other people might not know what this looks like. When I was 17, I spent a month on a teen unit. Teen psychiatric unit. And let me tell you, that is a friggin' doozy because there are some little 8-year-olds in there. Give me the quiet room because homicidal 8-year-olds are a lot. But how did the spaciousness and privacy and just the general environment and vibe of this private hospital, how was it different from some of the public units you had been on? Instead of in terms of aesthetics, space.
Aesthetic?
Anything, really.
Yeah. Well,
how did it differ?
I mean, the whole thing was just, it didn't feel like I was in a hospital necessarily. It felt more like what else can you compare it to? I mean, it was like this huge living room space with a bunch of chairs, comfortable chairs. Couches, TVs, like they had an Xbox system. Mm-hmm. They had computers on the other side.
Did yours have Just Dance?
No. I never played many video games, but I watched a lot of Bad Girls Club. Good job.
You were allowed to. I was on the teen unit. I keep forgetting. We were not allowed to watch things like that.
So
it was like Frozen
Planet. I had a very interesting.
I had the remote.
Flaming gay friend.
Yeah.
Named, let's say, Leo. And he really got us into Bad Girls Club. I shouldn't talk about him because I don't want to. I was going to tell a story, but I don't want to give out his information. So
right,
I'm not going to go there either. But anyways, yeah. So we had the big living room space with the comfy chairs, tables, TVs, two breakout rooms that they did groups in. This nice patio behind it, like huge, tall ceilings.
This is the private.
This is the private. Yes, private. So two tall ceilings. Everything was carpeted. There was a medication room. There was a they call it a nourishment room. You can just call it a fucking kitchen. Yeah. So you could go in there, you could get drinks, water, snacks. There was a microwave, there was a refrigerator. So they had and public units have that too, but it's
not anyone I have been in, but I'm sure they exist.
They're very bare bones. It's always tiled floors. It's very blank and bare in there. The beds are literally just
think a common area of a county jail, but maybe more padding.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, and less. Well, not less. No. Security, really.
No. No,
tons of just locked doors. Like
you're checked on personally every 15 minutes.
Yeah,
things are still bolted to the ground. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, very very shitty food. Just as basic as possible.
Were you allowed hot drinks in yours?
Yeah.
See, yeah,
we got coffee.
I wasn't allowed caffeine or hot drinks.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So the private place, just the amenities themselves, and then the bedrooms were just, you had this might sound very basic to someone who hasn't been in these kind of facilities, but we had bureaus, we had shelves, we had a chair in our room, we had big beds that were comfortable. Again, it was all carpeted. Each room had its own little window, or not, actually it wasn't little at all. It had a window, then you had all the bathroom space, and you just felt like you were not moving in somewhere at all, but staying somewhere homey.
Right.
And then the food at the dining hall was really good. The gym was, it was small, but it had a whole basketball court. And I actually really got back into running when I was there, which was really good. And you could meet with a personal trainer, and she was part of that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like this made a difference in terms of how mentally ill you personally felt? If that makes sense.
So you mean that the treatment actually helped me?
But even that just the environment itself contributed to the quality of your mental health on a day-to-day basis.
Definitely, yeah, because this place got me back into a routine that I never really appreciated as much as the routine I needed to get back into. And it seems, so it sounds really mundane. You go to groups, you go to appointments, you have gym time, you have pool time, you have dinner, then you hang out and go to bed, and it's every day. And then weekends are slightly lighter. And they also did have a church, and they had services, which was very cool.
Mm-hmm.
But
So I needed to get back into a healthy routine. And I was able to do that through all of these, this structure that they created for me. And I also made some really good friends. So I was actually laughing a lot with these people, hanging out with them at night, no phones, no nothing to distract us, you know, just us. There was so much solidarity because of what we had all been through and were going through. And like the vulnerability, I think brought us close really quickly. And that, all of that together, getting cell phones, like good food, all of those little things, getting fresh air, there was an herb garden, like all of those little pieces are actually very important.
Right.
For like a holistic, successful care.
How did you feel about the activities themselves?
In the private place or the public? Or both?
Both.
I mean, my problem with the public psych wards, again, is I'm glad that they're accepting of so many of people in so many different types of situations and severities of mental illness or addiction, et cetera. But it's very difficult to cater groups to such a diversity of people going through different things. And what ends up happening is they get catered to the lowest functioning in the group, which makes sense. But it means that they come off very childish oftentimes. And you just feel belittled more so than anything else. Like you're just talking about very basic things like, oh, what are 10 ways that we can relieve stress at home? Take a bath, like go on a walk. And you're like, maybe I'm jaded, but
these aren't all the blue things in the room.
Mm-hmm. Very basic stuff. We did chair yoga. Mm. Like, I don't want to do yoga on a chair. I want to do it standing up. And it was just, you know, I went to bingo. I went to I'm trying to remember. There was one guy that I liked out of all three of my stays. Paul, yeah. He was like a life coach. He was just had this motivational aura around him. And he came and talked to me personally, which I really appreciated. I think if therapists could do that more often, unscheduled, that would really impact patients in a positive way. Do you think he has to go out?
We might have to do a bathroom break real quick for the puppers. Is that what we're going to do? Do you want to do that?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay, so right now we are on Paul, and yeah, we'll be right back.
Leave it on.
No, I'm actually going to pause it and do a second recording because honestly, after we talk about Paul, I want to kind of talk about the end of your stay in private care and, you know, how integrating you back into society, and then just kind of talk about how your personal experiences are playing out on a larger scale in
terms of polypharmacy. Let's see how much time has gone by.
All right.